That includes your hardware and your equipment, so there's no add-on rental fees. And for those of us that are fortunate enough not to need, a low income rate, it's roughly $50-$55 a month for gigabit speed and no data caps. And so again, that is going to help those who are working from home or operating their business from home or wanting to start a business from home. Or for those of us that are working from home and even doing the kind of work that we're doing today, to be able to do it with high speed internet is critically important. So we're really excited about that and being able to save our school district about $500,000 a year by being their internet provider also means that in a time of, financial challenges, that they have money now that can go to support kids in a way that wasn't available previously. So we're really excited about it. It's great to see it rolling out in South Hillsboro. And our other targeted area during the phase one rollout is south of our Civic Center in our lowest, least connected census tract in the city. And it's also one of the two least connected census tracts in the whole entire metro area. And so we are making that a priority so that everybody has access to the internet. And Rob, this ties back to the diversity, inclusion, and equity question that we had earlier. We are making sure that the city is stepping into the gap and giving everybody equitable access to essential services.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for joining us today. It's a distinct pleasure to interview somebody before their election and know that they've already won. I can tell by your enthusiasm for all of the programs that you've earned the opportunity to run unopposed. Thank you again. And folks, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
Peace. What's good, people? You are listening to Culture in Motion, twice monthly. So we air this on cable community radio, KBOO.FM. So to us right now it's evening, but you might be listening and it might be the morning, it might be the afternoon, it might be the night. And we're broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. Ryan Danley, co-host.
What's up?
What up? I'm Mike Crenshaw. This is where we talk about the intersections between art, culture, music, politics, and activism, culture in motion. Thank you for being here with us.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
How's your week been, man?
It's been real up and down, man. I came into the up part of the week, feeling real positive because I've been going through some struggles lately that had me just kind of had me like, when is this going to end? Because everything is temporary, So, like, sometimes when I know, like, what it's like here in the winter when it rains for days on end, you forget what it's like when it's sunny, right? And that's kind of how some of the energy is sometimes in life. Like when things kind of feel real intense and crunchy ways, that's how it was. And then it got real good. And then I was like, yes, maybe I'm coming out of the crunch. How you been, man?
There's nothing but crunch out here.
There's hella crunch. It's like if they could make all so many different kinds of cereal out of this.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, you can probably see those like moments of like the eye of the storm sort of situation, where you can get out in the middle of it and be like, hey, yeah, this isn't so bad. But really, like, we got a long way to go, you and I started this around the beginning of the started our working together at the beginning of this pandemic, and we were kind of talking like, we're gonna look at like a crazy like 3 months or 6 months, and now here we are, it's like 9 months later, I mean, the sounds of the vaccine sound good. It's and like at least maybe that'll make some changes. But that first that first tier is all going to go to like frontline workers and stuff like that, as it should. But it'll be it's going to be interesting to see it actually like try to like, you know, what that's going to look like moving forward and when we're up the steam, like what, maybe by summertime, something like that. I don't know.
Well, you know, you write comedy, you perform as a stand-up comic, and I really admire the work you do as a comedian. And I've often fantasized about like doing more, making more of an effort to try to get into the field. But here, that said, I'll share with you some transparency about the kind of things that have been going on in my head that I think would probably make some cool material. So the vaccine is we're being told that it's on the way, and I've been thinking about like, am I gonna get it, or am I gonna be like, no, you can't take my civil liberties away from me, you know, you're gonna have to give it to me over my dead corpse or something like that, right? But I think, and this is the, like, I might have, you know, the little caricature voice I did there might be funny to some, but here's the real funny part to me. I thought about all the drugs I've actually put in my body over the course of my lifetime. And I was like, look, Mike, you know, if you can put that stuff in your body and not be concerned about the side effects or whether it's going to kill you, some of that stuff on a regular basis over the course of years, then what, like, if you got to keep working and you got to get the vaccine so you can keep working, and if the side effect of it is that you actually protect other people, maybe you should just take it when it comes. Yeah
And that's kind of where, you know, where I'm at with it. I'm, you know, not somebody who's, you know, I'm a science driven guy a lot. I mean, not that there aren't amazing examples of the failures of that in the past, or the exploitation of that in the past, MK Ultra, all that kind of stuff. But looking at, so this is pretty cool. It's actually kind of a cool vaccine. I was like reading about it, or I heard something about it the other day, where it kind of like works with your RNA. Like, it kind of like, rather than like kind of giving you like dead chemicals like a flu shot or something like that, it actually like works with your RNA to like create like natural antibodies in your body.
Will you get a six pack if you take it though? Yeah. Like, it's a cool vaccine.
Exactly. Does it make me jump higher? I have long-standing idea to do a documentary on me learning to slam dunk. So I, you know, maybe maybe this will help.
It might, yeah, yeah.
So I'm excited. I'll take it. I don't, you know what I mean? At this point, it's like, you know, I mean, like, if anything can get us back to like, being able to go out and be humans again, you know what I mean? I think it's tough for me, and I think it's like, you know, like, I think it's tough for us. I think I really see it in my kids, because I have, you know, a 17-year-old who graduated from high school last year, and I have a 14-year-old son who's in high school. And beyond like just even like the learning from home sort of situation, is like what were you doing at 14 and 17, right? You know what I mean? Like, you were out there like learning the world and kind of like learning your ropes and kind of like learning those things. And like, I really want to get to a place where it's safe for them to get back out and get back into this world and kind of like be humans and meet people and not just be so like restricted to what's coming through the screens, you know what I mean, as like as their information. Because I don't know if you've checked lately, but there's a lot of really stupid stuff coming through the screen for a lot of people, you know. And
I think that the term conspiracy theorist or conspiracy theory has been really developed strategically by a conspiracy to do this. Into a way to undermine, to disempower, to discredit thing, you know, streams of thought and consciousness and awareness that challenge the mainstream narratives. But because there is so much misinformation and disinformation, we do have to be careful about which information we choose to follow, man. And I always want to encourage myself and others to just think intuitively, but also do research. So that said, there's a lot of information that I've come across in recent years and decades about where we were headed as a civilization in terms of social control. And one of those, some of that information points to it being in the interest of the powers that be, of the super rich, the wealthy, the elite, and the systems they create for social control, to have us in our houses and looking at a screen. And even how the development of gaming and social media and device culture is evolving towards what will be an augmented reality that is fueled by artificial intelligence and the way we consume media and virtual reality. That'll be so, what would be the word, enthralling, that we're actually not gonna wanna unplug.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so I can see where, regardless of whether this virus is part of that, the response becomes something that can help that become more of a reality. And that is a reality that we're all been suddenly thrust into. And coming from a lifetime of incremental change, this is the fastest I've seen as many things change as have changed in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about this over the past few months on the show, is that, you know, we're seeing, like, I mean, kind of the quarantine and COVID and this whole like situation was ripe for everybody to be home to see like George Floyd and for, you know what I mean, and just grasp those moments. Sadly, it's also the same energy that gave people, you know, QAnon and, like, you know what I mean, like the same, like also gave those people that garbage, you know. And you know, so, but, like, you know, we probably wouldn't be here if this year wasn't this year. So, I mean, in the end, is 2020, like, we like to complain about it, is it terrible? Sure, it's terrible. But is it also, like, is it also time for these changes? You know what I mean? Like,
You know, it's interesting because my perspective is constantly shifting. And so, in a self-aware way, I'm going to be like, I'm growing, man.
Right.
You know, a lot of us are growing, and some of it's uncomfortable, but that's what growth actually is.
Sure.
You know? And I've been wondering how this is going to look, you know, 30 years down the road when we reflect back on this. And somebody said something to me the other day, because I've been doing all this media work around the connections between the anti-racist movement I was part of in the 80s and 90s and what shows up today gets called Antifa, and what are the parallels or similarities or intersections between that and Black Lives Matter and Trump and George Floyd and everything. So somebody said to me in that context, well, this is our, they were talking about the podcast, that it did happen here.
Right.
Podcast. Shout out to Aaron Yankee and Selena Flores, Mobile Stern and Icky, who've helped co-produce that for KBOO. Go listen to that, you guys, at the It Did Happen Here podcast. .com. But anyway, they were talking about how it took this long for that period to start being talked about, the same way that we talk about the 60s. And that was profound to me, because for all my life, the 60s were the standard,
right?
You know, of movement in this country that we looked at when we looked at history. And maybe now, you know, what's happened in 2020 gets to establish a different standard, so we're not always using the 60s as the focal point.
Yeah, and that would be good, because, I mean, there's, like, you know, there's a lot of flaws in the 60s, you know, and a lot of things, not necessarily within the most of the civil rights movement, but in the other protests that were going on, and, you know, and the drift from that protest into sort of, like, you know, like, if we use that as a model, we could look at, like, where those failed, because, I mean, we come off the 60s and then through the 70s, and, like, the hangover of the 60s and 70s was really the 80s, which, like, snapped us, you know what I mean, like, snapped this whole country way further right, you know, all right. Those, a lot of those placard carrying folks from the 60s that we see and we admire, you know suburban white people who took that ended up being, you know, Reaganites in the 80s, and, you know what I mean, and, like, how do we, you know, how do we avoid that backlash again? Because, I mean, we've just ended up so, so right in this country, so far right, that it's like, you know, just looking at, like, you know, moderate Democrats, and I know this is so cliche, but, like, you know, it's really, like, you know, like, it almost feels, you know, like, to repeat what a lot of people have said, but it's like, you know, the moderate Democrat is almost like a Republican of the past, you know what I mean? Like, simply having, like caring for your community in any regard is now like a liberal stance. Like, believing that schools should, like, exist is now like a liberal like, how did we get, like, here, you know what I mean? And, like, we have to make sure that we don't drift, because we are adrift right in this country, you know.
We're yeah, you're right. Part of the truth is that we are adrift, but I do believe we need to be adrift. And sometimes while we're out here in the open seas, it's clear, man. You know, it's clear as day, but it's the middle of the night and you can see the stars like never before. And it's time to, in a lot of ways, let go of some of the falsehoods that we've been carrying with us, man. And one of those falsehoods, I believe, is becoming more clear, is this whole difference between the right and the left in terms of the political establishment, you know, and really starting to get that. The neoliberal is just about the same thing as the right in terms of their interest in prioritizing you and me,
sure,
and our well-being. And one of them is gonna speak in some more flowery language to get your support, and one of them's just gonna be like, screw you, man, you know. But the result is the same thing, and it's about the consolidation and control of resources and wealth. And what's becoming more clear in addition to that is that we have less stake in a system that isn't able to support us and frankly never wanted to. The degree to which the system was supporting working class people was because it needed us to perpetuate the means of production. But now that the means of production no longer need a human to press the lever, so to speak, metaphorically, we're kind of obsolete in a lot of ways. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at what do you do with a populace that's now obsolete? And there's choice. You can send them to war, you can over-police them, you can kill them off quick, or you can kill them off slow. And those are the options. And I believe we're gonna be doing all of those in various degrees of intensity. But the real question is, what do we do with ourselves? And when we're asking that question, we're gonna have to come up with some answers that we haven't had to up to this point. And ultimately we're gonna be like, what do we do with those guys? You know, the ones who are aligned in a system that doesn't give a damn about anyone.
I mean, I think it's going to have to take just a completely different way that we look at, like, humanity and what we do and what we have to offer. And, like, I mean, this idea that kicks around in our head that, like, literally everybody has to be, like, working for, like, this, like, to make this money and, like, to all these things. It's like, you know, I mean, you're correct. I heard somebody from the Fed say the other day that the old economy is basically gone. Mm-hmm. That this period of time just sort of sped up changes that were already happening. Automation, by shopping from home, like all of those things that were already sort of happening, making malls obsolete, lots of big box stores obsolete, lots of things, like all of that stuff is like, you know, we have now just pushed that forward. And you know, and that we're going to be looking at it. I think and then the point of what I was listening to was like, and of course, as it comes down to it, the most vulnerable will be the most hurt by it. So you'll see a lot of Black and brown women who make up most of those jobs. You'll see a lot of, you'll see a lot of situations that where people who are typically vulnerable are now going to be even more vulnerable because we've kind of created this, you know, that's just how it always works. When it rolls downhill, it lands
on. And I think, you know, those of us who've oriented ourselves to certain ways of learning and thinking and focusing, we're like inclined to be like, okay, it does roll downhill. And those of us who disproportionately suffered the most are about to suffer even more. And it's about to get exponentially worse for us. But I'm also here to say, wait a minute. When do we get to go, you know what? No, we don't have to suffer exponentially worse. We don't have to keep taking it like we've been taking it. And I think it's a scary thing to say, because we're talking about doing some stuff that we actually don't know how to do on a lot of levels.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like to believe that there's some stuff that we intuitively know how to do, because we've survived this long against some of the most horrendous stuff that humans have had to endure. And we've still been able to show up and love and create things of beauty. But I think it's just an unknown, but we gotta create. And that's where it even becomes a spiritual thing. I don't mean like religion, but like we gotta be able to create something out of not knowing the answer already, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
No, and I think that's I think that's, it's like imagining like a new color. You know what I mean? Like we're like, how do we break these? I mean, like, how do we break these bounds of tradition and these like this hard wiring that we have in us? That's like, and I mean, I think that there's good things out of there. I mean, I think like, I mean, as much as like the word boomer gets tossed around and stuff like that, I mean, to me, there's a little bit of like, you know what, maybe it's good we're not like so excited about the people before us and their flaws. And maybe now we can look to the future and say, hey, like, listen, you know what, we're not going to be flawed people. You know, we're going to be, these generations before us had flaws. And I don't think we've really done that as a country before, as a society. We have like, yes, we should be celebrating elders and their experience and all of that sort of thing, clearly. But it's also okay to say, you know what, that was their stuff, and now this is our stuff. You know what I mean? And we have to fix this. And we have some big problems that are being left. I mean, not necessarily even for you and I, but like for the Gen Z kids, our kids, you know, our kids' age, you know, like, you know, the economy's impossible to live on for most people. The, you know what I mean, like it's just hasn't been built very well a lot, and those are going to have to be fixed, you know. And I mean, and so
that, it, I'm sorry to cut you off,
man. No, it's okay.
That is a question of revolution or evolution,
right?
You know, but whatever you're going to call it, it's got to be different than the status quo.
Yep.
Because the status quo is the result of the system that was built to serve those who have reaped the benefits of it so well, you know? And in that, there's always collateral damage, right? There's a lot of lives lost, a lot of people thrown away. That's what we see every time we go down the freeway now, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's gonna be some camps on the side of the road. More people out there destitute every day, thrust out of the economy, right? And then there's along with the collateral damage, there's going to be that buffer class. And the buffer class previously had been people who were allowed access to enough wealth that they could live comfortably and even have some multi-generational stuff to pass down. That class has grown significantly smaller. There's not enough room in that class for people to work their way up the ladder into it as there once had been. And then there's going to be these people who are just delusional, you know? And that's a lot of what we're seeing evidence of in our communities. People who are willing to fight violently against their own class interests because of their belief in an illusion, yep. You know? And we got to watch out for them. But I do believe, like I've heard a few hip hop artists say this, I think 2 Chainz is one of the first people I heard that supposedly coined this, and who knows where he picked it up from or if it's his, but it's that a smart person can act dumb, but a dumb person can't act smart. And so I say that to say, if you are the type who has a propensity for certain rags with certain patterns and certain colors and certain arrangements, it might be easy to see you from a mile away. We could just either avoid you altogether or set up a trap that would deal with you.
So you got a lot going on. I got a couple of Hard Times articles printed last week. That was pretty cool. I got an interview coming up with the guys from Less Than Jake. That's going to be pretty fun. They're releasing an album coming out on the Hard Noise. So everybody should check in on that. What's going on with you? You got a busy book.
Yeah, I've got multiple music projects. So we just released the Rebel Wise album, and we've been using that to engage public school classrooms. I just finished teaching a residency at the Bodecker. Hopefully that'll lead to more. And then I've got the project-based learning stuff with Alliance and Meek, two alternative schools, where we're gonna be doing we're gonna be doing a music compilation featuring Portland Public School students from each of those schools. I mentioned elder artists such as myself. I've still got to reach out to some veterans in the local music community, get them involved. And then a lot of these younger artists from Black Lives Matter protests happening that we got to understand were singers and songwriters, poets and MCs, pairing them all up, get a compilation done, and then get outside the frame to shoot a few music videos for it. So that's just my day job stuff. And then I've got a metal EP coming out called Black Skinhead. I got the book, my first draft for the Black Skinhead book, which is basically my autobiographical memoir, is going to be coming out. Well, my first draft is due March 21st. I've got this Russian hip hop exchange project I'm project director for. That ends in March. So I've been doing these virtual exchanges between Russian hip hop artists and artists here. And then we just recorded the first video for the Ghosts of Our Revolutionary Ancestors project. That's in post-production, so hopefully we'll be releasing that soon. That's myself, Red Ray Frazier, libretto, DJ Clavicle. I got started working with my partner, Generic, aka Eric Abel. We're working on the screenplay, pitching a documentary for Black Skinhead. So hopefully that'll take off soon. There's some good interest in that. And then doing music with him again. We released our first single. It's on my SoundCloud called Freedom with the artist from Tanzania I met. And now when I was last in Tanzania in Zanzibar, his name is Kiloriti, Kiloriti. Check him out. He's on YouTube. He's all over. So yeah, Eric and I did the song Kiloriti, and this East African Records wants to give us a distribution deal. So I'm potentially looking at starting a record label and using the relationships with all these African hip hop artists and dancehall artists that I've met over the years touring with the African Hip Hop Caravan to provide the library content. So I always overcommit, but I'm actually happier with the level of commitment that I have right now, because it's all chosen work.
Sure.
Stuff I want to be doing. And the challenge is just, how do I take care of myself?
Mm-hmm.
How do I stay away from the COVID and develop even more healthy habits as I age, so that I have the energy to show up for this stuff in a way that makes it work the way it should and can. And gotta ask the same questions about my family, man. I gotta be a father. You know, sure. I gotta be a good partner while I'm doing that stuff, because it's easy in capitalism, especially in patriarchy and capitalism, for us men to act like all we gotta do is work and everything else can just fall by the wayside. But the reality of it is, the people that support us and love us, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be showing up for the work we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's so cliche, but like, you know, it is the job. It's not even job, like taking care of kids and like being showing up for that. That's like,
it'd be the priority, right?
It's just the life. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, I mean, like, I don't even look at it as like work. I mean, it's just what you do. It's like,
yeah.
Right. I get myself a bowl of cereal. I take care of my kids. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta get in that mindset. So yeah, I mean, like juggling it all and trying to even like, I mean, that's a heavy plate of stuff. But, whew, glad I know you. I'm just saying. You know what I mean? Like, it's a cool bounty you got there, man.
Thank you, brother, and thanks for always being here and helping the both of us keep culture in motion going. And again, shout out for the It Did Happen Here podcast.
Yep, for sure.
Shout out. Have you checked that out yourself?
Yeah, I listened a little bit of it the other day. I'm gonna check it out more. I don't get, because I'm not in my car very often, I don't get as much like podcast time. You know what I mean? Like, sure. I feel like because I'm home all the time, like it's like I can sit around and listen out, but it's on the short list of items to check out, of course.
Yeah. Word up. Well, man, when can the people check you out? Are you doing anything online in terms of comedy?
No, I was on a show last week, and I felt really good to do stand up again. So I'm gonna do something more here, and I'm trying to. I got some other irons in the fire, trying to get on some different podcasts and different keep the rust off. You know what I mean?
So, right, right.
You know, because it's easy to drift. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. So, yeah. Well, shoot, man. Thank you guys who are listening, for tuning in. We'll be back soon with some more guests. And thanks for holding it down with me, Ryan.
Always, man. Likewise. Thanks, Culture Motion. Check us out on Facebook. You know, and we'll be uploading to Spotify and all your other favorite streaming platforms. Thank you.
Peace, y'all.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO is excited to be part of Willamette Week GiveGuide this year. When you support KBOO through GiveGuide, not only does it support your favorite community radio station, it also gives a little back to you in return. When you donate $10 or more, you'll get